I'm not sure you understand how the Supreme Court works, considering they just decide what to appeal and are not a trial court. You could perhaps try this in a local trial court.
Interesting.
You are listening to The Obscure Gentleman, a weekly pop culture podcast dedicated to filtering pop culture through the eyes and sphincter of the internet.
Yeah, sphincters this time.
Yep.
We're clenching them tight.
I am your host, Aaron A. Alvarez, and who are you?
I am Alex Mitchell, the other guy.
The coastess or whatever.
Yeah. I'm going coast to coast with the most or something.
We have a Patreon.
Yeah.
Putting that out there again. If you want to support the podcast and the webcomic, feel free to donate whatever you like. Patreon.com/TheObscureGentleman.
You get little incentives for doing so.
Yeah.
Little prizes.
With this podcast, subscribe. There's this heart thing on iTunes. I don't know what that is.
But leave a review.
You can do that too. Yeah, leave a review.
Share with your friends.
Tell your mother, your father, your brother, your sister.
And bring your daughter to the slaughter.
Do that too.
Yay.
Antonio Banderas, you know what's going on.
Back together again, eh? Let's play.
Gang bang!
There was a firefight!
But I don't want to be a pirate!
What is the charge? Eating a meal? A succulent Chinese meal?
How can you stop?
This is a big one. Hear that, Elizabeth? I'm coming to join you.
You don't know what hard times are, Daddy.
Kiss my sweaty balls, you fat.
Oh, look. Rocks.
Game over!
You lose. Good day, sir.
No!
All right, so this isn't a normal episode. So we're doing something different, and if you listen to Monday's episode, we went into it just a little bit. So we're becoming a bi-weekly podcast.
Yeah.
So
you're going to have to change your intro a little bit.
Probably, yeah. So 2 a week. And essentially, so Monday's episode will remain the same format. Mm-hmm. Basic pop culture stuff followed by
Netflix
roulette.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then, basically it's fluid. We do whatever we want. The same thing here, but there's more going to be a focus on comic books.
Mm-hmm.
So Wednesdays you get comic book stuff, Mondays you get general pop culture. Because we figured it's harder to fit comic books into the Monday thing,
yeah.
Because it's too wide and encompassing. So, this is I want to say it's like the pilot episode, even though this is episode 11, I think.
You should start separating them numerically. I don't know.
We're bi-weekly pod. We don't need to separate.
All right.
This is the pilot episode.
It's the primer, I guess
you
could say.
Yeah, or it's a primer to a
prologue.
So, we're going to be doing a few different things here, on Wednesdays at least. So, there's going to be, essentially, a lot of just comic book discussion, less internet-only content where it's taking comments and dissecting them.
Mm-hmm.
Say, for example, we choose a comic book character, and we just discuss it back and forth. And yeah, sometimes we'll even draw comments to see what, like, the internet might think about certain characters. Since Alex isn't really reading anything right now,
no.
And he's going to be starting after Secret Wars ends, which is currently going on.
I feel like I've been waiting for this to end for like the past 3 months.
It'll come November is when it starts.
Holy God.
So,
all right.
So come November, Alex is going to be essentially not reviewing, but
just reading stuff that.
Yeah, and we're going to be going off on that, and so that's him going to be diving back into Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
Every now and then, my brother James and I will be going over old comics to see if, not only if they hold up, but just to discuss them, and it's sort of a look back on them. I will be telling stories of comic book creators and just weird things that have happened there's a lot of strange shit that's gone on in the history of comic books.
Comic books in general, there's a lot of weird history.
There's not only a lot of weird history, there's just a lot of fucked up things. It's a very strange industry with a crazy history. With a lot of man children is the best way to describe it.
Right.
Lots of great people, but then lots of horrible, horrible people. I mean, just to tease, I mean, eventually I will be telling you tales of John Byrne.
Mm-hmm.
And you will never look at him the same way again. Today, though, I do have some stuff about Bob Kane.
Okay.
That I'm going to regale. And eventually I'm going to do
Brother of Bob Abel.
God damn it. Eventually, we're going to do a full episode dedicated to Bob Kane. Because I think
He reminds me of the original, like fucked up comic book guy.
Yeah, he pretty much is.
Yeah.
He's your prototypical, like, what is it to be a piece of shit in the comic industry? And for those listening and you don't understand why I'm saying that, you will eventually. There's some really, really horrible things about him. And so he's the creator of Batman. I say that in quotations.
Yeah, he did little quotation marks.
Because, well, you'll know.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there'll be profiles on creators, past and present. Just fun facts, weird stories. And, yeah, the occasional internet thing will seep in there of weird conversations. Because, I mean...
Oh, yeah. That's a thing.
You go on comic book forums and it's... Wow, it's a mess. It's usually a mess.
I feel like I've had weirder comic book conversations in real life with other people rather than internet.
The thing is, in real life, it can get weird because you're talking about the content.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the internet, it gets weird but also passionate and also violent.
Violent.
Because people take shit too seriously and then they essentially say, this person who wrote the story needs to die so I can have my character back. It's like, no, Dan Slott doesn't need to die because you don't like how he writes Spider-Man. But just to start things off, I guess, what's your history with comic books?
So I was born in 91, so obviously...
1891.
1991. Obviously, I grew up at a time when comics were kind of... Everyone was buying a lot of them.
You grew up during this... Well, we both grew up during the speculation boom.
Yeah.
Yeah, when it was... Comics were selling very well, but for...
Not for a good reason.
For the wrong reasons, yeah.
Also, I had a lot of media that was comic book related. So I had Batman, the animated series. I had Superman.
X-Men.
Spider-Man. Hulk was on, I think.
Yeah, I mean, because since we're both the same age, we both grew up in that same environment. Yeah. But I think the difference, I would think, is because of my older brother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you had more exposure to
I had exposure to comics themselves, too. Yeah. But, we both grew up during the speculator boom, so it was like...
What is that, just to for
well,
people who don't
know? Well, in the 1990s, this initially started in the very late 80s, but then it transitioned into the 90s where it became huge. Basically, what was happening was Marvel, they're essentially the ones who started this. They realized, hey, if we sell multiple covers from the same issue, mm-hmm. variant covers, we can essentially jack up prices and tell people that they're worth more than they actually are. So you had this collector market grow. And the collector market, or the speculators, they figured all of these comics...
will eventually one day be
like... be worth something. So you had Marvel putting out holographic foil covers.
Oh, yeah.
You had them putting out nothing but gimmick covers. The content of the books mattered a little bit less, and it was more about how pretty the cover is. But not only that, the word special edition, limited edition was... put a lot, and people were just buying them up by the truckload. So because of that...
Was unlimited edition ever a thing?
I don't think so.
Okay, because that sounds like something that they...
So because people were buying up comic books by the truckload, and you had this industry that went from pretty good, okay sales,
mm-hmm.
to all of a sudden like, whoa, why, like, there's millions of copies being sold of X-Force out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And it was healthy for the industry in terms of just... the revenue, like that Marvel and then DC were getting. And then of course, you had Image happen after the walkout of all the artists. And it was a crazy time. So there was a lot of original content, but then there was also a lot of just like issue number ones where it's like, yeah, I'm going to get this, I'll put my kid through college with it later. Now, what speculators didn't understand was the only reason things like Action Comics number one or Amazing Fantasy were even worth anything was because scarcity.
Yeah.
There's not that many issues of them available,
mm-hmm.
so they're worth more.
Aren't there only like 6 or 7 Action Comics
number I think there's about 13 right 13? Now right. that are on the, not on the market, but like
better accounted known. For. Yeah.
And see, because of this, they're obviously worth more. So the speculator boom, you had a bunch of idiots. That's essentially what they were. They were stupid people who were trying to cash in fast, like, oh my god, I'm going to make so much money. And there were people who did know this, and they sold to suckers, essentially.
Yeah.
And they were able to make their money. But then something happened. Around 96, 97, the bubble burst. And all hell broke loose. Marvel and DC stopped making money. Like, they went from selling millions of copies to selling only, like, 500,000 per book, mm-hmm. 200,000 per book, 100,000 per book. And see, at that time, that was low. Nowadays, you're lucky if a book makes, like, 30,000.
Yeah.
Like, but in the 90s, this was like, oh, man, it's like everyone was rolling on Easy Street. So, the bubble burst. Marvel almost went bankrupt. That was also because since they made so much money, they were investing in, like, it was called Marvel Mania at Universal Studios. There's actually a restaurant, a themed restaurant. You know, so to get out of this, they had to sell a lot of movie rights.
That's why they have the fucked up rights.
Yeah, so they had to sell a lot of movie rights. They had to essentially just, like, find a way to make their IPs make the money before they went under. DC was doing a little bit better, but that's because they were owned by Time Warner.
Yeah.
So they were in a little bit better position. Image Comics, again, the same thing was happening to all across the board. Comic book shops, there were literally thousands of them across the nation. They were in shopping malls. They were next to schools. Most of them shut down after the bubble burst.
I think I know, like, 2 or 3 right off the bat right now.
Yeah, that I could go to. I mean, the ones that stayed were the ones that were super popular and, like, kept that market and also had been there prior to the speculation boom. Because prior to the speculation boom, there were comic book shops, but they were mostly hobby shops and, like, hobby lobbies and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Speculation boom happened. All of a sudden, people were just opening them, like, left and right. So what happened was, bubble bursts, everyone starts going out of business. And then you have this industry where a lot of people kind of walked away from comics. Even, like, fans walked away because they were like, you know what? Screw this. This is just, it's a mess. And eventually things did get better, and things are currently better, but there are some people who are theorizing maybe we're up for another bubble burst. And that's because variant covers are now becoming a thing again,
yeah.
to an insane rate. Marvel is kind of responsible for that. But, I mean, digital is a thing now, so it might not be as bad, but yeah, that's when we came up with when we were coming up was with during that era where there were commercials, product tie-ins. You go to Pizza Hut, there's X-Men stuff.
Yeah, because, like, my parents, well, my dad was a kid in, like, the 40s, so 40s and 50s,
yeah.
so he knew about, like, Superman.
Yeah,
he's not very familiar with Batman.
Yeah,
I guess.
Well, I mean, when you're a kid in that age, it's like Superman was the thing.
Yeah. And he didn't... I don't think he was around alive to watch those serials or whatever, so I don't think that was... The Batman...
Oh, I was like, I was like, of course he was alive for Superman.
So he's used to, like, the 50s Superman. And then he read some comics. So... And likewise, he's not familiar with Marvel at all.
Oh, no.
That's completely, like...
Well, yeah, because your father, during the 60s is when Marvel really came into it.
Yeah.
I mean,
so, and same with my mom too. She didn't read comic books.
Marvel, when they came into prominence in the 60s, they were really more geared towards like
teens, right?
Not just teens, like college kids almost. Oh. A lot of college kids read them because there was a big, like, those early Marvel issues.
It was like, we wanted to appeal to more like problems that older kids might be.
It's not just that either. It's like there's this real feeling of counterculture with them.
Yeah.
Where, because DC had this sort of, this,
like,
clean-cut image of, like, these smiling superheroes, whereas Marvel had this, like, real-world problems. Things are kind of messed up. I mean, you look
at... I think that's why I liked X-Men. I think that was the first, like... Like, I liked Superman and Batman.
Yeah.
Like, they were cool to me, but... And it's weird, because I didn't like the X-Men cartoon show. That was what was weird for me. I didn't like that.
What's interesting, though, is X-Men was one of the least popular things in the 60s.
Yeah.
When that was released, it didn't really do all that well, and it was canceled for almost 10 years.
And that's when Giant Size...
When Chris Claremont brought it back. Yeah. Then all of a sudden it was mega popular. And a lot of people don't realize that when X-Men was first launched, it was kind of just like, who cares?
I could kind of understand why they don't seem as interesting as...
That title was sort of made as just a filler title.
Yeah.
The whole thing about the mutants, and Stanley just needed a quick way for, like, how these people get their powers. Like, I don't want to come up with a bunch of origins.
Yeah, they were born with it.
So him and Kirby were just like, just make it born with it. And that was it. And so,
but that's so interesting to me that to me is more interesting than...
Yeah, I mean, it was a throwaway thing.
I love that, though. Yeah. I think that's awesome.
But it didn't really catch on with anyone until later, but... it makes sense that, like, the older generation was more accustomed to Superman, because,
yeah.
I mean, that was the hero. He was everywhere. Batman was there, too, but he wasn't, like, he wasn't as popular
yet. Not until,
yet.
Like, the 60s then, right? Wasn't that
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, until when the show came around. But then again...
That's what my dad knows is Batman, which is funny to me. Yeah. It's not a bad
no,
thing.
No,
really,
it's not a bad
it's
thing.
Just a...
But as for the Marvel Age of Comics, yeah, the 60s, it was a counterculture thing. When people were fighting Vietnam, the hippies were really into Marvel Comics.
Yeah.
I mean, Marvel Comics touched on stuff about Vietnam, too, and you even have the Punisher being a Vietnam veteran. But for us, though, comics were a weird thing because they had been around for decades, and...
Trying to jump in was weird.
Well, I mean,
I do remember trying to buy a few, and it was weird because my cousin, she was really into, like, Spider-Man and all
yeah.
that. So, and she, by my cousin, I mean, she was basically like a guardian for me. She was like,
yeah.
I think she was like in her 30s when I was just a little kid.
Oh, okay.
So, or maybe she was a little younger. I don't know. I'm not trying to put her age out there.
Yeah.
She's going to kill me if she ever hears this. So, she would take me and like her kids to like comic book shops.
Yeah.
And you know, she always tried to get me onto like Spider-Man. Her freaking license plate's a symbiote.
Oh, okay. Well,
so,
very 90s.
Yeah. So, like, I was trying to get into, like, Carnage and all that. And it didn't make any sense to me.
Here's the other thing is... Because, I mean, I remember even being young when I was, like, really little. I wasn't really into the story as much. I was more into, like, I want to read the cool stuff. I want to look at the cool stuff.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I would have very... Like, I'd go to the this comic book place called Frank and Sons. It's like a collector's
place. It's still around.
Yeah, it's still around. Yeah. I would essentially get... comes from 25-cent boxes, and I would grab
that big dude with the
yeah.
looks like George R. R. Martin.
So I wouldn't get any particular issues in order or anything. I mean, when I started seriously reading comics was around when I was probably like 11, and my brother James of 12 for a Penny fame, and also the Obscure Gentleman, he's the head writer.
Yeah.
He pretty much got me into the narrative of comics, of reading them for the long arcs and the long stories. And
is that still a thing that people just buy them just to look at? And
I don't think it is really anymore. I think now
I'm invested in long term.
Well, also because
I know that's why some people just buy trades.
Well, here's the thing: comics nowadays aren't, because back then you could buy a random issue and you could be fine because it was a one and done.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of comics used to have one story in one issue. But nowadays, it's like, there's arcs. It's like 5-issue arcs, 6-issue arcs. When that used to be like an event with 6 issues. So, I want to say it started, for me at least, with getting into narrative storytelling comics, was with Grant Morrison's JLA.
Okay.
My brother had those trades, and I read them, and they were just... They stuck out to me so much, and it was so fun, and... There was Kyle Rayner as Green Lantern at the time, and I had liked him because I thought he looked cool. And so my first early memories of comics are the Green Lantern Kyle Rayner and his series, because I had various random issues. But after reading JLA, I was like, I need to know more about this. So from there, I started reading his actual series, and it just exploded from there. So.
Is he your favorite Green Lantern?
He is, okay. And he always will be. But on top of that, my brother Jim was more of a Marvel fan.
Yeah.
I mean, But I mean, he was still reading DC at the time, and so it was weird though. I went more towards the DC path of characters. Marvel, I liked the stuff.
What were they putting out at the time?
No, it was like the same stuff. A lot of X-Men.
Okay.
I mean, that's Marvel for a while was just nothing but X-Men.
Well, because their movies were out.
Well, no, this was before the movies.
Oh wow,
this was even before the movies. You know, and then I mean, because again, this was Grant Morrison's JLA era. This is before Grant Morrison worked on X-Men, mm-hmm. which he would eventually do. But yeah, I was reading a lot more DC comics. I cared more about the DC characters. This is before I was even a huge Superman fan. The Marvel stuff, I mean, yeah, I liked the X-Men. I thought they were cool and all, but my heart was into DC and the legacies and all the heroes. I mean, nowadays you talk to me about comics and it's like I'm mostly Marvel.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's a topic for another time. But for you, though, it was more like just sporadic. Like
it was sporadic because, like, it's mostly based off what the TV was showing me, and then it's like, okay, well, how do I get into it from there?
And yeah, it is hard. It was kind of hard to find an entry point.
Yeah, because, like, comic book shops were kind of hard for me to find just because I didn't drive. I was just a little kid.
Well, and also, it's like, the books come out once a month
mm-hmm.
on a certain week, every Wednesday, and so you have to kind of keep up to it, and if you miss an issue, it's like, oh, well, what happened last time?
What did help, though, was Barnes & Noble.
Yeah.
Because my parents and I used to go, like, every Sunday. They'd check out books.
And they'd have a spinner rack, right?
Drink coffee. Yeah. Not only that, though, towards the back, they had the trade paperbacks.
Yeah.
But they also had the DC, and I mean DC, there's a DK or whatever.
Oh, the encyclopedias?
The big encyclopedias.
The DK, yeah.
Yeah, of Marvel and DC characters. So I bought, like, both of those. Like, and then there was, like, one for X-Men, and there was one for Spider-Man characters.
Yeah, Marvel at a time was releasing, and I don't think DK made those ones. DC had the DK ones. Marvel had these...
they had another group, I remember.
There were these premium format guides that had, like, every single character
bios, and
they had a Spider-Man one,
storylines,
they had an X-Men one.
Yeah, I had the X-Men and the Spider-Man.
That's where I initially was schooled with Marvel, where I learned. I mean, going back even earlier, there was these.
I think I still have that book. Actually, I'm gonna have to.
It's a hardcover, right?
Yeah,
yeah. I mean,
and I think the most recent thing was an entry for X-Men 2, the movie.
Oh, God.
That's how old this thing is, you know.
Going further back, there was a guidebook to the Marvel Universe. It was this... A lot of the artwork was, like, from the 80s, and my brothers had it, and I would just flip through it, and, like... I mean, that's how I knew about, like, Eggman and stuff like that.
Yeah.
All those really, like horrible characters. But I can remember talking to my brother Nick about the characters, and we'd just say, like, who should play who in a movie if they ever made a movie?
Yeah.
But that's how I came up with Marvel, at least, was through that. I mean, but then there wasn't a rabid, like, I need to know the history of this. DC, on the other hand...
I felt that was more, because they rely on their old history a lot.
Well, it wasn't just that. I preferred how the characters looked. JLA, it gave me all their... Because, I mean, when Morrison wrote it, it was their main heroes.
Mm-hmm.
It was after... I mean, because...
I love that book, by the way.
Yeah, well, I mean, you have to remember, before Morrison came on board, the JLA had gone into this area where it was like, it was just fucking anyone was a member.
Yeah.
I mean, you had just had Extreme Justice happen.
Because he wanted Aquaman, Batman.
He wanted the classic...
setup.
Yeah, the Big Seven.
Yeah.
He wanted them to be back, and he did. And to me, that was the perfect, I guess, entry point for me, because it exposed me to... I guess the main history of DC, and from there I spread out. And luckily at the time, this is when the internet started becoming sort of a thing. I'd be on my brother's computer just like looking up like different heroes and backstories, and it was all just like amazing to me. And Green Lantern though became like this weird passion of mine, where I would go on Green Lantern only forums. I'd learn about Green Lantern, and I became like a Green. I still consider myself a Green Lantern fanboy.
Yeah, I mean, you got a ring on.
Yeah,
right.
I don't read the current comics.
Yeah.
Except I do read Omega Men, which
is that?
It's fucking great. It's one of the few DC comics that I do enjoy.
I think it's a bit regrettable that there aren't more DC comic books for me to enjoy right now.
There's a reason for it, but again, that's something...
We'll get into that.
And Kyle Rayner is featured in it, so...
Okay.
But, yeah, I mean, comics were this thing where they were an escape. It was cool to read stories about people just doing good.
Yeah.
And, it wasn't just superheroes, because eventually I did branch out. I was reading Preacher before, 9/11.
Put that in perspective.
I mean, I started reading Preacher right before and during 9/11, so around that time.
Wow, Preacher.
Really? Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was 11 years old. Yeah. My brother Jim was just like, you want to read this? And I was like, okay. So, and he would get each trade, every few months, and it was just, oh my, this is amazing. So that led me into thinking, because before that, of course, you're a kid, you're thinking comics are just superheroes.
Guys in masks and capes.
Yeah, but then when you learn, whoa, comics could be other stuff, it's it could be, normal stories.
I think due to, The Walking Dead now, I think people are...
Are understanding that.
That you can do other things with comics.
Yeah, I mean, people still think comic books are just superheroes.
Yeah.
Which is a shame, because it's
There's a lot of interesting, good stories out there that aren't just Scalped. I like Scalped.
Yeah. Jason Aaron's Scalped is also pretty phenomenal. And that's the
Transmet.
Thing. Love and Rockets is another thing that I got into a few years ago. So comics...
Did you read Transmetropolitan?
Yes, I did read Transmetropolitan.
Right.
I loved it for the most part. Some of it was kind of... But, and that's the thing. I would say with this... With Wednesday's episodes, we're not only going to cover superheroes. I mean, a majority is going to be superheroes because, that's just the nature of the beast.
Yeah.
I
think my first, just going back really quickly, my first one was Ultimate Spider-Man.
Ultimate Spider-Man was a gateway for a lot of people.
Yeah.
It
was cool because at Barnes & Noble also, they had an omnibus of the first 50 issues.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So that's what I had.
Yeah,
and then I had to buy the rest, on my own.
That's the perfect intro for a lot of people because it's
and it was great. I love those stories. It reminded me of, original Spider-Man, but it was still new.
You have Spider-Man without all the baggage, and it's you don't have to be well versed in Marvel.
Yeah.
There's no callbacks where you're gonna go what does that mean? Who's Pacepot Pete? it's Stiltman. What the hell's that? It is a weird thing. Getting into comic books, it's harder nowadays, I think.
Because I'm trying to get back into, Marvel and DC.
But you
right
need
now,
to find a jumping on
yeah,
point.
Yeah, and I'm
every time there's a new jumping on point, I tell you, I'm like...
Is that villains thing? I'm like, okay, I'll wait, or I'll wait for that, and then I'm gonna...
But there is the perfect jumping on point happening soon, and that's all new, all different Marvel.
Okay.
DC, they're...
I feel like I need to go back to
See, and that's the problem is
yeah.
they kind of had a jumping on point recently with DCU. It was called DCYOU. DCU.
Okay.
And it kind of floundered.
Okay.
It didn't do as well as they thought it would.
That was their thing where they wanted to bring in more diverse characters.
Not just that, they wanted to indie-fy DC.
Oh, what does that mean?
The books had more of an indie comic book feel.
Mm.
It was less about superheroes, more about slice of life type stuff.
Oh. That, I mean, I think it's a...
It works with certain titles.
Yeah.
Certain titles.
Batgirl, I could have imagined
Yeah, but
that.
Then they... Well, no, they had done that... That's why they did this.
Oh,
because Batgirl sold so well. It's also called Batgirling. That's the term.
Oh.
They also wanted to mix things up with their main hero. So, all the other titles got indie-fied or Batgirled. They also experimented with new titles, but the main titles like Flash, Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, they got status quo shifts. Superman became depowered, and then now he has his Golden Age level style powers.
Okay.
Hal Jordan's no longer Green Lantern. He has this prototype wrist gauntlet thing. Batman, Bruce Wayne's no longer Batman. Now it's Commissioner Gordon in a robot suit, and he has a normal suit too, but yeah, it's stupid. They decided to just change everything up, and it really hasn't worked for them. They've really disenfranchised a lot of their readers these past years since the New 52 started over 5 years ago.
Wow.
They've really
That was big, by the way. You and I were really excited for that.
Oh yeah, I remember
we were at a fucking Denny's, I think. We were trying to say, which one do you want to read? I don't know.
And then I remember I went on Discount Comic Book Services and
yeah,
I ordered that. I was like, okay, which ones do you want? I'm gonna order these,
and then you'll pay me for whatever.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah, I remember.
And so
that.
We did that, and then I reading through the ones
you read all the ones I bought too, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
And then I was like, do you want to read any of mine? You're like, sure. So and after that, it was just kind of
Yeah.
I mean, there were some I tried to stick with, like Superman, And,
I think I bought a few of those.
I tried sticking with Dan Jurgens' Superman.
I tried going with Action Comics.
Yeah, and then Grant Morrison's Action.
Yeah.
I tried, and then I was just like, I can't do this. This is just...
There's too much right now. It
was just like...
It's like, it was okay.
Nothing felt... I don't know. It didn't feel like the DC I remember. And then after that, I started getting into Marvel, and now it's like, I'm a Marvel zombie essentially now. So make my Marvel is sort of how I am. But I mean, there's some okay DC. Some, I say that, but who knows? So I mean, that's what comics mean to us. I mean, comics mean a lot more to me. I would say, because like I've come up with comics since I was little. The emotional impact is huge. You're more into the media related to comic books.
Yeah.
But hopefully now...
I like toys and stuff,
yeah,
too.
So hopefully when all new Marvel comes out, it's going to be... You're going to find that reconnect.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and there's tons of stuff to to experiment with, because, I mean, they're going to have over 60 titles.
Okay.
So, but... So, I guess I'm going to... Before we go... I guess I'll just end with this. This is, oh boy. So this is about Bob Kane.
Oh, yeah.
So here's a here's a story about him. Oh, no. Okay, so Bob Kane, artist, I say that with quotations, during his time on Batman, created Batman or whatever, he either swiped a lot from other comic books, or he had other people draw for him and then just took the credit. It was like ghost drawing or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, even though he did that, he thought one day, oh, hey, I'm going to be a fine artist, he thought. Like, you know, like a real artist. A museum artist.
Okay.
A painter, as it were.
Mm.
So,
I think starting by drawing your own work helps,
you would think.
But
I mean, the guy was just out to make money.
Okay.
I mean, his father was a lawyer, and it was just... That's another story about how Bob Kane was able to get so much money out of DC.
Oh, cool.
And screw over Bill Finger.
Yeah.
But that's, again, that's sort of another time. So, this story is taken from Mark Evanier's website. Mark Evanier is, he was the assistant to Jack Kirby.
Okay.
Now he's a professional comic book historian. He pretty much knows the ins and outs of everything. Compiles stories from different pros from the decades. You want to know comics, you talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
So here's a story. Bob had gotten to the point where he never drew anything. Never drew anything on the Batman comics anyway. Sheldon Moldoff, who was ghosting them all, and when he didn't, someone else did. The only thing I think Bob ever drew was when we'd be out somewhere in a restaurant or someplace, and a pretty girl would come over to him and say, "Are you really the man who draws Batman?" Then he would whip out a little sketch for her, a big sketch if she was wearing something low-cut, and would bend over to watch him draw. One day, I'm over at his house to discuss this newspaper strip idea he had, and he's talking about who we might get to draw it. And I was going to write it, and we were going to get someone else to draw it. I'm not sure Bob was going to do it. I'm not sure what Bob was going to do on it except sign his name. I said to him, "Bob, isn't it disappointing to you that you don't draw anymore? You're once such a great artist." He wasn't, but you had to talk to Bob that way. He said, "Oh no, let me show you something." He took me into a little room in his house. It was his studio. I didn't even know he still had a studio. It was all set up with easels and things and there were paintings. Paintings of clowns. You know the kind, like the ones Red Skeleton used to do? Just these insipid portraits of clowns, all signed very large. Bob Kane. He was so proud of them. He said, "These are the paintings that are going to make me in the world of art. Batman was a big deal in one world, and these paintings will soon be in every gallery in the world." He thought the Louvre was going to take down the Mona Lisa and put up his clown paintings. I didn't have the heart to tell him. So, a few months later, I'm up at DC, and I run into Eddie Herron. Eddie was another writer up there, and we got to talking about Bob, and Bob's name came up. Eddie said, "Did you hear? Bob's getting sued by one of his ghost artists." I said, "How is that possible? Shelley Moldoff suing Bob?" But they had a clear deal. Shelley knew he wasn't going to get credit for anything. Eddie said, "No, not Shelley. Bob was being sued by the person who'd painted the clowns for him." That's one of many Bob Kane stories.
That's amazing.
Clowns in the Louvre.
Wow.
This man, the...
I don't know. I mean, like, he is the original, like, weird comic book guy that, like, I'm aware of.
He's the first, what's a good word?
Executive, I think.
He's the first, just piece of shit. He is a sack of shit who...
It's weird, though, because, like, whenever I see, like, new Batman media... Like, you know how comic books, they like to say, oh, it's West on Morrison Avenue. They always say... They always name something after, like, a comic book creator.
Yeah.
I've never actively seen Kane's name get out there. I always see, like, Bill Finger, Dick Sprang. The only time you see Kane's
name...
Yeah.
...is when it's, like... when they have to credit him in every comic.
Yeah.
Batman created by Bob Kane.
Yeah.
Which is... Legally, they have to do that.
Yeah.
Legally, they cannot ever say anyone else. But comic book writers and artists, they all know the fucking truth.
Yeah, and they all, and that's why I always see them credit, like, Bill Finger.
Yeah, but they legally can't do it in the comic. But it's weird. The industry has essentially decided, yeah, Bill Finger is the person who deserves credit.
Well, we still have to mention
But this because guy. Of legal bullshit...
Here's this guy, yeah.
I haven't heard one professional speak well of...
Bob Kane.
Of Bob Kane. Even Stan Lee hasn't spoken well of Bob Kane. And there's a funny story I'll eventually tell about Stan Lee at Bob Kane's funeral.
Wow.
But, yeah, I mean, it's pretty awesome. Like, I mean, and yeah, you'll find this everywhere in comics. It's just stories where it's just like, why? What's wrong with these people? But, I mean, Jack Kirby once said, comics will break your heart. It's a tough business.
That's sad.
Yeah, I love that quote. He said, comics will break your heart, kid. Yeah, someone once asked him, like, it was like a teenager saying they want to get, they're telling him he wanted to get into comics, and this was like in the 80s, this was like a few years before he passed away, it was like late 80s, and he looked at him and he just shook his head and said, comics will break your heart, kid. I was like, god damn. But I'll tell plenty of Jack Kirby stories here.
Jack Kirby's awesome.
Yeah, so, every Wednesday, this podcast will bring you more comic book oriented stuff. Mondays, we'll bring you pop culture news up at the ass. So
yes, or sphincters,
or sphincters as well.
Yes.
So
callback.
I'm not sure you understand how the Supreme Court works, considering they just decide what to appeal and are not a trial court. You could perhaps try this in a local trial court. Now, before you say anything,
okay.
I'm going to tell you what they're responding to. Because they're responding to another comment.
Okay.
One thing that's on my bucket list is to go to get a Judge Dredd helmet and randomly barge into a Supreme Court hearing screaming, I am the law! Alex, what song are we about to play right now?
Anthrax, I am the law?